Hi, and welcome to The Art of Relating. This is Zach Schwartz, your host for installment number 16, I believe. Hi, and welcome. Remember, we don't do psychotherapy or counseling over the radio, but this is us together, me and you, working on concepts and skills that produce what I call effective humanistic interactions, efficient, kind, in harmony with your values, and strong. So last week we talked about the tortoise and the hare, or pursuers and avoiders, as an intro to patterns that come up a lot when I work with couples or work on interactional skills. And we discussed the natures, problems, and what you can do when a pursuer and avoider get together. Remember, the podcasts are available on my website, dynskills.com. Go there if you want to listen to any of the past shows. And there's also books, trainings, and other material. Also, if you have a question or comment about what I share today, you can write Zach@kepw.org, and I will deal with those comments and questions in the very next show. I am going to begin once again with grounding, because you should be beginning everything you do with grounding. Remember, ground is where you have free will. It's your center. It's your feet on the ground. It's where you can make a choice to use your logic, to use your values, to use your intuitions in how you respond to another person. If you're not grounded, you're just reacting. And then all these concepts and skills aren't doing you much good. You've got to be grounded to use your free will and make cooperative and effective choices. So remember the five easy pieces. If you've got your own way to do this, just do it your way. But the five easy pieces are bottom half, good connection with the ground, solid, strong, open hips, open knees, open ankles. Remember, open and relaxed is how energy flows, and you want to be connected to the ground. That's your base. Top half, relaxed but hold a shape. So relaxed lets energy flow. Hold a shape means you're centered, you're assertive, you have some value, you're not aggressive, and you're not acquiescent. Get in that posture and then breathe. That's number three. Big breath in, bottom and top, fill both chambers, let it all go. Remember, we're in Eugene, so some people say breathe in green kindness from the fourth chakra through the left nostril and breathe out wisdom, purple, from the sixth chakra. That's all fine, but for grounding purposes, just fill both chambers and let it all go. So there's a connection between your head and your heart and your legs. Shake out the kinks, get rid of any chronic tension, and finally, talk to yourself. And what we recommend is three sets of two: relax, affirm, and unhook. So chill out, calm down. I'm a good person. I'm doing the best I can. It's all small. I'm just a speck living on a speck. Unhooking is, remember, the trickiest part. It's stepping out of what I call the movie, which is the ongoing reality of your ego, your manifestation. And you want to be able to stop that, step out, and just be what I call your Obi-Wan self or your soul. Remember, I am 67, but I'm also 14 billion. And when I'm grounding, it's better to be the 14 billion-year-old guy, because he's always more peaceful. Now, the second common pattern I want to discuss on the program, I call inherent creeping sexism. Bear with. So here I am, for example, and I would consider myself not xenophobic, not sexist, not racist. I'm a humanist, and those are my values, and that's how I try to conduct myself on any given moment. But those things, like sexism and racism. People work on their isms. My hard drive, my connection to the world, our history is so full of those kinds of isms that we constantly, any of us, can take the time to work on eliminating those from our interactions and cleaning up our own vestiges of those what I consider pretty horrible things. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and if you look at, say, television shows from that period, it's appalling how much we didn't notice was completely sexist or racist in that programming, and how we thought and how we acted, all sort of twisted and entering my brain on a daily basis as I watch those shows or hang out with people. I mean, we've come a long way in the last 50 years to address these issues and to clean up some of these isms, but it's an ongoing process and it doesn't stop. Imagine I'm walking down the street and three guys are walking toward me, all peaceful. Imagine them white, as I am, or imagine them another race, like Latino. I don't act different, but do I think different? Does it hit me in a different place? That's one place, by playing with those images, for example, that I can look at what in me is still vestigial racism or sexism when I talk to women. I know a person who, when we drive together, always, when we see a car acting weirdly, goes, "Women drivers," and then looks at me and laughs and goes, "Why did I say women drivers? Where did that come from?" So any of us, while I'm saying this, can look at ourselves and pick out various bits in our brains of those kinds of what I consider problems, things to fix, things to edit, things to work on. Today I want to focus on sexism and the patterns that produces in a relationship, things we can all work on to try and fix those things that are inherent, hard to notice, automatic in our relationships with our spouses, in our relationship with our kids, friends, etc. So say a couple comes in to see me to work on their communication, because remember, all couples want to work on communication. And they've been together 10 years, they've got a couple of kids, let's call them John and Mary, and they come in because Mary's about to leave John. She's full of resentment and unhappiness, and can talk about that at length pretty smoothly. John doesn't understand. He loves his family, he loves his spouse, he doesn't want them to break up. So what's going on? How have they related for the last 10 years that's led to this dangerous point for their family? And notice that these are both good people with good values, and they want to have a happy, healthy family and a happy, healthy marriage. But over the years, resentment has built up, the fighting's gotten worse, they're on the brink of being incompatible. So they share. Say the woman speaks first and she feels victimized and bullied and pushed around and dominated and treated like she's lesser than, or treated like she's unintelligent, or treated like her opinions are wrong. She feels like she doesn't get to express herself, she doesn't get respected, she doesn't get treated as an equal. John, often this is the case, is somewhat surprised by all this. He's always tried to be fair. He's always tried to express his opinions and understand hers. He's always thought of her as an equal, and can't understand where all this resentment is coming from or what's going wrong. So I may ask them to interact about any subject. Let's say they pick money and budget as an example of how their process breaks down. And she says something like, I always have to ask his permission. If I need a bottle of shampoo, I have to come to him and say, can I have $10 to go buy a bottle of shampoo? I hate that. I feel trapped. I feel subjugated. It's embarrassing. It's pain. He starts, John, to get annoyed and say, I've never said no, and I always give you money when you need it. And she goes, well, not always. But why should I be in a position where I have to ask for it? John continues explaining that he earns all the money. He's responsible for all the bills. He manages the money. So he knows what goes in and out. And Mary says, yeah, but if you need shampoo or a racquetball racket or a pair of sneakers, you just go and buy it. I can't do that. I have to ask you if we can afford to spend the money. Doesn't seem like equality. I ask, you know, are you equals in value? Is the family a two-headed dragon? You each have as much right as the other to have your opinion felt, to make decisions, to parent, or to make expenditures. They both, surprisingly, say yes to those questions. The values are not the problem. The problem is when I say, okay, for example, why don't you have equal access to the bank account? So if she needs money, she can just go get it. And John says, well, without knowing what bills are due or what we have to pay out this month, I get afraid if she goes to the bank and just starts taking money out that we won't have enough to pay our bills at the end of the month. I continue and say, well, whose money is it? John says, well, I earn it. I go, whoa, hold that thought. Whose money is it? Once you bring it home, does it belong to both of you? The law would say yes. Our assets are equally shared if we're legally married. And notice that even as we're taking finances as an example and watching them interact, there's moment to moment buttons being pushed. I can see her feeling hurt, feeling resentful, feeling oppressed by what's being said and how it's being said. And I look at John, and he still has only a vague clue that he's saying anything wrong. And not only is that true, but he also has logical arguments for why he's saying what he's saying. But again, those logical arguments presented at that moment actually make matters worse and not better. It's got nothing to do with his intention to be a good husband or a good partner or be generous with what he earns. It's got to do with the politics of men and women and wage earners and homemakers. And those are complicated politics with lots of variables. And we all want to look at what about our interactions contains sexist material, contains oppressive material. Many of the things we talked about, having whose rights fights, defending with logic, not empathizing, not validating each other. It's an art to act as partners and get those isms out of the interaction. So it's simple to have the value, to want equality, to want to treat my partner well, I say to John, but look, you're a guy, and that carries a lot of weight in a household. And, well, an example of that is I talk to my children at the dinner table, and I say, if mom gets angry and punches the table with her fist, what do you think? And the kids look at me kind of quizzically and say, well, I think mom's mad about something. And I say, right, but what if I get mad and I hit the table with my fist? What do you think then? And the kids will say something like, I think we're gonna die. Like, just my size, just my gender, just my being a guy carries a lot of weight in the family, a lot of potential intimidation, even if I don't intend it. I tend to underestimate, I say to John, how much weight I have as a guy in this culture, as a white guy, a middle-aged guy, a wage-earning guy, all these things and more. add to my position as a male in the household. And so I tend, because I don't see those things in myself, to underestimate, and I suspect John does too, the effect of that power and how much it can intimidate or make the rest of the family back off, and problems arise. If I do something too strong for my spouse, if John does something with Mary, like raise his voice or wrinkle his brow or adjust his posture or defend with logic, there's so many things that become invitations for Mary to acquiesce, not to want to escalate, not to want to start a big fight. Who would with one of these guys? So they tend to give in. They tend to say, okay, peace. You know, I don't need to buy the shampoo. We don't have to spend the money right now. That's not how they feel about the shampoo. That's how they, that's really a product of trying to acquiesce and make peace and quiet the guy down. And unfortunately, John, in that same interaction, doesn't even realize the strength of what he's sharing and the effect it's having on her. And again, I point out that these come up, these interactive dynamics come up in many relationships to varying degrees. And a lot of people, if I do a meet with Mary alone, say, she will vent all of these things and how many times she answers to make peace, or she answers because she feels intimidated, which then leads to John feeling resentful because Mary didn't follow through on her promise, or Mary didn't watch the budget the way he asked her to. You see, very messy. So I hope I've given you a little bit of a picture of how messy this gets, even though both are good people, even though they want to love each other and get along as equals, how these dynamics semi-consciously